you. Please help me in welcoming Rita.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and allowing me to be of service. Am I loud enough for everybody back there?
Yeah.
Great. I'm hard of hearing, and I get so frustrated when people are saying very personal things in really soft voices, and the people next to them are crying, and I have no idea what's going on. Anyway, so I'll try to keep my voice up. And also, I'm here today to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I have so much hope to share with you that I'm afraid that I'm going to get caught up in the experience and forget to get to the hope. So I'm going to try to keep with it. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous. I joined Overeaters Anonymous in 1983. So I've got a long history. And so for me to tell my story, I got to do a lot of editing. And the thing that I have to edit for is, I don't know if this really fits with that sentence, but I got to stay out of the way. I'm here to say something that's going to help somebody else. And I don't know what that's going to be. So I just have to get up here, tell my story, and be as honest as I can, which is not easy for me. And I would have told you before I came into the program, I'm probably the most honest person you ever met. And now I know I'm not, especially with myself. And so I've learned a lot about honesty while I've been in this program, and I have to practice it really hard. So hopefully today I will be honest. I know another person in program who stops his share often and says, "Is that really the truth?" "Yeah, I think that's really the truth." And I kind of have to do that, you know. Did I just exaggerate that? Or is that really what I'd like you to believe instead of what, you know the drill. I know I'm speaking to my people here. So to begin, I came into this program. I'm a binger. I don't binge anymore, but I was a binger. I've been a compulsive overeater as long as I can remember, now that I know the signs. However, I grew up in a very isolated situation, and food was a companion for me and a friend, and it served a real purpose for me. And I lived way out in the country, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of activities or things like that, and food became, you know, a very nice activity for me. I got a lot of my father was a sugar addict. I didn't know that at the time either, but I got a lot of strokes from him for making things that he could eat and I could eat. And I was one of those people that, you know, took a little sliver of whatever I made, just a sliver, went and did something, came back, took another little sliver, went and did something, came back, took another. Pretty soon it's like, wait, what happened to it? It's gone. Anyway, so growing up in this isolated situation with food as my friend and being in the country, I was very active. You know, we rode our bikes all day, I rode my horse, I was slightly overweight most of my life, but it didn't really translate into obesity until later in life when I was in my 30s. And I suddenly, you know, gained a whole bunch of weight and couldn't lose it. And it just led to this, we know the cycle. I felt worse about myself. I ate more. The more I ate, the worse I felt about myself, you know, and da 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 da. And I couldn't get out of it. And I couldn't stop eating. I was scared. Sugar addict too. I had to have my sweets or I couldn't get through the night. I mean, honestly, it wasn't like a choice. I was an addict. I couldn't get through the night without those things. I knew I couldn't. So I'd do whatever I had to do to get those things. And so I was pretty scared. I was overweight. I felt really bad about myself and I wasn't getting any better. And a friend invited me to my first OA meeting, and I went, and I had this strange reaction, like kind of a combination of hope and judgmentalness all at the same time. You know, like, oh, these people and their God, you know, it's like, those people, I know those people. I grew up with people like that. They're not able to live their life without that crutch. And I don't want to be one of them. And at the same time, they're telling me that there's something about me that's beyond this weight. That's been, you know, something's going on here. It's not just that I eat too much. And I was like, wow, all these people are saying stuff I never heard people say before. They're saying stuff that I do that I never heard. They're saying things about how they feel and think that I never heard anybody talk about before. And I tell you, it was scary. I had gone to one meeting way before that, before I got obesity, and that's a long story too. But I went to this meeting, and I heard people talking about their deepest, darkest, and I went, no, I don't think so. I'm not that bad. I'm out of here. Well, a few years later, I was that bad, and I was back, and I was glad to hear them talking. So anyway, that's my experience. I had 7 years of abstinence from sugar, and then I could tell you what I think happened. I don't really know. I lost it, and I had a lot of trouble getting it back. I left these rooms for a while, not very long, but I came back, and something always got me back here, taking a friend, or I don't know. I always ended up coming back, never stayed out very long. I did take little vacations, you know, but usually after gaining 30 more pounds in no time at all, I'd be back. And so I came back, but I could not get that abstinence back. I could not get physical recovery. I don't know why. I still to this day don't know why. But I know what happened. And, I have some pictures. I'll send them around. I have this picture of me in Hawaii. We went to Hawaii. I remember that. And I remember we're in this paradise, right? And I'm in this body, right? I gained my highest weight, 233 pounds in Overeaters Anonymous in the program. And so I'm in Hawaii, and I've got to put on that bathing suit. We went kayaking. I couldn't get into the kayak. I was like too bulky to maneuver my body. And I did get into the water, and it was heaven. I just was floating, not floating really, but you know, kind of drifting around in this warm, beautiful water. And I thought, I love this. And so I went home, and I joined a gym, and they had an outside pool that was 88 degrees all year round. And I was teaching junior high at the time, and my students went to that gym. I'm thinking, do I really want to put on a bathing suit? Do I want to be in the locker room with these people? And I remember thinking, what do I care what they think? This is my life. This is my life. And that was like being a people pleaser. That was huge for me. Being somebody that was always afraid of what other people would think of me. That was huge for me. And that was more than 10 years ago. Okay, so that was a turning point. And then going to the doctor and finding out I was pre-diabetic, and my cholesterol's up and all those things, and I realized the only thing that's standing between me and health is what I'm putting in my mouth, because other than that, I was healthy. So I got what people have been saying all along. This is a killer disease. But for me, it had been a disease of wanting to look good to the world. And it suddenly became way more than that. It was about, am I going to be in the world or not? Am I going to die? And I know I didn't want to. So I became willing to do those things that maybe I had, you know, they say take what you like and leave the rest. And I took what I wanted and left the rest. And I went, okay, self-honesty, this isn't working for me. And why is it not working for me? Because I'm not doing everything they say. You know, I'm picking and choosing, I'm cherry picking what I like and what I don't like. I ran my program, right? And so I started running the program, and it made all the difference. And I got to tell you, I wanted to get to the hope part. So today, I guess what I used to sit in meetings and listen to people like me and think, well, you know, they got something I don't have, you know, I'll never have, right? There's something about, you know, I can't really judge what's going to happen to me by them, because they're probably a lot better than me. Everybody's a lot better than me. And I'm probably just like hopeless. You know, one of those people they say in an introduction, you know, there are such unfortunates that lack the ability to be honest with themselves. And maybe I'm one of them. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not, and you're not. We are compulsive eaters, and there is a solution. And we just have to work it. And so I've worked it now, and I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you some now pictures. This is a picture of me and my little dogs. I got a story to tell you about my dogs. And this is my do-over. This I'm going to tell you about this. This is I suddenly realized that I don't know if it's suddenly, but I realized that I have choices now I never had. You know, and I could go back to compulsive eating if I want to. And believe me, I don't run a perfect program by any means. I don't go near my addictive foods. I don't go there. Luckily, I've been relieved of that. I don't have to go there. I sometimes look at something and say, and that's about it. You know, and I go, wait. But sometimes I eat more than I need to. You know, I mean, honestly, you know, I do. But I guess what I want to say about that is that I am not perfect, but I still have been able to use this program to improve my life in ways that I never imagined. I have been able to work this program and get gifts that I never would have imagined. And so I know at this point that my imagination is about this big compared to what the possibilities my higher power has in mind for me, if I'm willing to be open to them. If I'm going to be stubborn and decide that it's going to be this way, then I'll get it. And it's going to be a lot less than if I went, okay, just like we're speaking here today, okay, what do you need me to say? I'll say it. Get out of the way. So that's pretty much my life now. How do I get out of the way and let whatever is running the show work? And so this is my do-over. I didn't go to my senior prom. Nobody asked me to my senior prom, and in those days, you didn't ask anybody either. I wouldn't have probably anyway. So the seniors in my town, at the high school, got together, and they invited all the senior center, which I turned 70 2 weeks ago, right? I qualify. So they invited us to a prom, and they got a band, and they played our music. And they danced with us. A bunch of us. That's my daughter's prom dress.
Wow.
Luckily, it didn't have a zipper. It had a little tie, you know, little laces in the back. So, you know. Anyway, so I went to my senior prom. And I told my husband, I want a corsage. You get a boutonniere. So we had a wonderful time, and they crowned us king and queen of the world. So that's a do-over, okay? And now I know that, thank you, I can always have do-overs thanks to the steps, because that's what the steps are about for me. They're like letting me live the life I always wanted to, even though I didn't know what it was, you know? And I gotta have one more minute to tell you about my dog, okay? The dogs that are going around, those were that black and white one. That was my heart dog. I had cancer, and I had to go through chemotherapy. And that dog would not leave my side. He wouldn't go for a walk. I mean, he was there with me. And he died less than a year ago. Both of those dogs died within 2 months of each other. And I was bereft. They died of cancer. They were old. But they're even old in that picture, but they don't look like it. And so my husband said, shortly after I got back from I held one, the black and white one, Javier, in my arms while he died. And my husband said, in my opinion, we need to get another dog right away. And I'm like, I'm glad he said in my opinion, because it's just his opinion and it's bullshit. I didn't say that out loud. Although I could have. He would be used to that. But anyway, then he started talking about what he thought we should do. And I'm going, oh my God, if I leave it up to him, no telling what's going to happen. So I decided to get involved in the process of getting another dog. And he was exactly right. I started looking at other dogs, and I left the past behind and started looking to the future again. And I got in touch with this organization that rescues the breed. Those dogs are Havanese, and I really like the breed. And they rescue them from puppy mills. And so this organization, a bunch of people went back to Missouri to a puppy mill and rescued 75 Havanese dogs from the puppy mill. And this one of the board members lives in Southern California. That's the closest person in this organization. And I had told her I wanted this dog. So she was at the mill, and one of the workers came and put this dog in her arms. And she said to the people around her, this one's for Rita. And she brought the dog back to Southern California. I drove down and got it, brought it back. And I tell you, I tried to get a picture, but I couldn't print today on my computer. This dog is just, oh my God, it's just so wonderful. And I think, what are the chances of the dog that was perfect for me? And this dog is exactly the dog I would have wanted. How did he get all the way from Missouri to me? Like, what? What a miracle. And there's even more miracles connected with that, and I just don't have time for them all. Thank you for letting me share.